Journalist Noam Scheiber has spent years chronicling the shifting terrain of American labor and politics. In his new book, Mutiny, The Rise and Revolt of the College-Educated Working Class, he turns to a surprising constituency, degree holders who feel economically and culturally unmoored. Blending reporting and analysis, Scheiber examines how this group is reshaping institutions, challenging elites, and redefining what it means to be working class in 21st century America. Scheiber covers worker and labor issues for the New York Times, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Noam Scheiber, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it too.
So what brought you to the subject of wanting to look at this revolt and what was happening within higher education?
Yeah, so I'll just back up a little bit. The book is about a generation of people who graduated from college beginning in the kind of late 2000s, so 2009, 10, 11, right after the Great Recession. And that generation really runs through the present, you know, so people who are graduating in May and June of this year. And this was a generation of folks that did more than any other generation in history to prepare to go to college. They went to school for longer. They did more homework. Many, many more of them took advanced placement classes, you know, college level classes in high school. I think the number of people taking those AP classes increased by a factor of 10 between the early 80s and the early 2010s. So a huge amount of preparation. They got a kind of harder sell than any generation in history, from, you know, everyone from their parents to presidents like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, about why they absolutely had to go to college. It was no longer a luxury. It was an absolute imperative. And then more of them went to college than any generation in history. And yet, once they graduated, the reality they encountered was very different from the image that they had kind of been sold on. You know, college had been sold as this ticket to the upper middle class. But when they graduated, you know, after the Great Recession, the value of or at least the return on a college degree was really stagnating and then declining. So the gap between what they had expected and what they had been told and what they found when they got out of college was pretty wide, and they got pretty frustrated. So that's the kind of broad strokes of, you know, of the dilemma that this group of folks I'm writing about encountered. The way I got into it is I cover labor for the New York Times. And in the summer of 2021, I got an email from a labor organizer who had been a source of mine. And he said that there was a group of folks at a Starbucks store in Buffalo, New York, who were going to try to unionize. And, you know, other groups of workers had tried to unionize at Starbucks in the past, but had not succeeded. But he felt pretty good about it. And they ultimately had about six groups of workers at six different stores in Buffalo who filed to have union elections. The NLRB, the government agency that oversees this, threw out three of them, but they ended up having three elections in Buffalo. The union won two of those three elections, and this was kind of in the late fall of 21. And then in January, I think this group initially thought that this would just be a kind of a local Buffalo initiative. But shortly after they won in late 21, a bunch of Starbucks workers at other stores across the country decided that they would want to do this too. So in January, about a half a dozen other stores decided to file for union elections in cities like Phoenix and Boston and Jacksonville, Florida. And then by February, it was a few dozen stores. And then by March, it was several dozen stores. And this then grew into the hundreds as the year went on. And as I was watching this play out, I thought, okay, this is interesting. You know, this thing is just kind of spreading like wildfire. And so I just started calling people at these different stores, asking them why they were doing this. And in the large majority of cases, it was college grads, people who had gone to college, people who had a lot of debt. They were working at Starbucks. Obviously, this was not the job that they had envisioned having when they went to college. And I just started to notice these commonalities, these patterns. And pretty soon, the union organizing spread to other places, to Apple stores and Trader Joe's and REI, Amazon. And it was a pretty similar pattern that I noticed. A lot of college grads were involved in this. They often had a lot of debt. This was not the job that they had envisioned for themselves when they went to college. And it just struck me that there must be something deeper going on here. So I kind of started, digging around in the data and talking to economists and talking to more of these folks who were involved, and it just became clear that that there was a kind of generational story here. Something had gone wrong for this this generation of folks who had gone to college, and the book is an attempt to understand that and explain how they responded to it.
You do this in a fascinating way. We encounter some really very interesting people in this pursuit. One of the people that we meet is Teddy Hoffman. You mentioned Starbucks. Teddy is a longtime Starbucks employee. Tell us a little bit about Teddy.
Yeah, so Teddy is someone I met in the fall of 2022. So his store in Chicago had unionized by this point. There were more than 100 stores that had unionized across the country by this point. And one day in November of 22, about 100 of them went on strike. And so I just got in my car and started driving around the Chicago area to a few of the stores that had unionized and then gone on strike. And I pulled up at Teddy's store. And there were these very evocative papier-mâché puppets that they had made. And one of them was a puppet of the iconic Starbucks mermaid, the green Starbucks mermaid. And so I got out and I talked to the worker who was holding this puppet, and I introduced myself as a Times reporter. And they said, "Oh, well, you have to go talk to Teddy." So I pulled up to this guy who had a beard and these very expressive eyebrows, and I noticed he was wearing just like a jean jacket. And this was, mid to late November in Chicago. It was like in the high 20s and snowing. And so I figured, well, if nothing else, this guy's like made it of hearty stuff. So that's something. And we just started talking, and he told me he'd graduated from Grinnell College in Iowa, pretty prestigious liberal arts college in Iowa. And after that, he had really toured the world. He had gone to New Zealand and Ghana and India and South Africa. And I asked him, well, were you just kind of backpacking around after college? And he said, "No, I actually won this fellowship called the Watson Fellowship, which is a very prestigious postgraduate fellowship that funds study abroad." And so something just didn't track for me. This guy had done very well in college. He had won this fellowship, and yet he'd been working at Starbucks by that point for almost 7 years. And as we talked, and then we ended up, I ended up talking on the phone and talking more, I started to get my head around his story. And there were some idiosyncrasies, some things that were unique to his story. He had wanted to be an actor, and that kind of fell through, and then struggled for a bit for some direction. But there were some bigger forces at work too. One of them in his case was the pandemic. By the time he started, pulling together his resume and networking and talking to folks who might be interested in hiring him for a different job, this was on the eve of the pandemic, and then the pandemic hits and just really upends the labor market, even for people with impressive resumes. And so, in a way, he was a unique character, but in other ways, he really epitomized some of the bigger forces that were, making it a struggle for college grads to get jobs.
Tell me about where the mutiny comes in. I mean, you make it clear, but there are these various mutinous acts that are taking place that show us exactly how this rise and revolt that you talk about has gone over in the labor market.
Yeah, so I'll answer that on two levels. One is a kind of broader high altitude shift. I think so. I graduated from college in 1998, which I sometimes joke was probably or arguably the best year in the history of the world to graduate from college. We had a really tight labor market. The stock market was going bananas. Everyone was starting a tech company left and right. It felt like, once you walked off across the stage and got your diploma, they just handed you equity in a startup. And so that was a very good moment. And I think people my generation really thought of themselves, even if they came out of college and got a job that wasn't the job that, their dream job, they still imagined that they were kind of on a professional track or a management track. And so, even if they were an intern or a lowly assistant, or even if they were working at Starbucks, they thought of that as a very temporary thing en route to a much more lucrative, much more satisfying, much higher status career. So they identified immediately, with kind of the professional class or the management class or the ownership class, when they got out of college. And I think not too long after that, within a decade, people who were graduating from college began to think of themselves very differently. They thought of themselves not as not as sort of future managers or owners or professionals, but as workers. And this is something that came through very clearly in, across the companies that I, where I spoke to workers, whether it was at Apple stores or video game developers where I talked to workers, or Hollywood writers who form one of the subplots in the book. The one common thread was they had gone to college and they had ambitions to enter some profession, but they were sort of stymied. And in that process, they had really begun to think of themselves as workers, not sort of management adjacent or professionals or future owners. They really thought of themselves as workers. And this extended, I found really all the way up the kind of skill and income ladder. So I wrote a story about a group of doctors at a big healthcare system in Minnesota called Allina. And about 100 doctors, hospital doctors, unionized at the hospital system in the spring of 2023. And then another 400 primary care doctors in that healthcare system unionized later that year. So over 500 doctors at this big healthcare system unionized. And even in talking to these doctors, I heard over and over that, we're supposed to be highly trained professionals, but they really treat us like factory workers. We have all these bean counters and management consultants who run this health system, and they tell us how much time we can spend with a patient and how long we can keep them in the hospital and all the questions we have to ask them. And they really just step all over us. And it was just striking to see that even the most highly trained, well-paid workers of this generation still thought of themselves on some level as workers. And that was very different. If you talk to a doctor my age who graduated in the late 90s, they were, they thought of themselves as, these kind of high status professionals. And so that's, on one level, the mutiny is just the sense that, we, the workers, are not in it together with the bosses. We are very different. We see the world differently. We have different interests. And we want to kind of look out for ourselves. And this idea that we're kind of all on the same team is just a myth that you try to sell us to, keep us in line. So that's at one level. But on another level, it was much more literal. A lot of workers at these companies were unionizing. Their companies very much did not want them to do that. In many cases, they brought in consultants and law firms, and they dispatched executives from corporate headquarters. I talk about how a whole group of executives came from Seattle at Starbucks and basically lived in Buffalo for the fall of 2021 while these group of workers were trying to unionize. And their whole mission was essentially to sort of defuse the union campaign. So, in a very real way, I think both the workers thought of themselves as kind of engaged in a mutiny, which is literally like seizing power from the people in charge. And I think the people in charge thought of it that way as well. They thought of it as a kind of mutiny or rebellion from the rank and file folks who were suddenly trying to rise up and take control of the steering wheel.
One of the things that dawned on me while I was reading this book is that as you look, say, 20 years ago and the recession and the time of people coming out of college at that point, and then, of course, there is actions that take place, and then you look at the impact of COVID, and now you look at the very real impact of AI, and you just get the sense that there are so many turning points. This is something that is always shifting.
So let me just back up a little bit. So I think that's right. So there was this period of 25 years or so when going to college was just kind of a can't lose investment. So in the 80s and 90s into the early 2000s, you just saw the return on a college degree really shoot up and kind of almost in a straight line, kind of up and to the right. The return just got better and better. And it really felt like, you could go to Harvard or you could go to, a local public school. And, maybe you do slightly better if you go to Harvard and study engineering or economics or something. But even the people who were going to, to local public schools, public universities, were also doing very well in this 25-year period. And then somewhere in the kind of, around 2004, 5-ish, the return starts to slow down a little bit. We see this in some data. And then it really takes a big hit in 2008 during the recession. And then what we see is it just never really recovers after that. And there are a bunch of reasons. One is, just many more people are going to college. So, if there's a big increase in supply, of anything really, whether it's houses or cars or college grads, then it becomes more of a buyer's market, right? So, just having a bigger number of people go and graduate in some ways kind of gluts the market and lowers the return. But we definitely see the demand side too. And you mentioned AI, and it's certainly the case that we're already seeing some impact on white collar work of AI, but the effect of automation and kind of software on the demand for college grads, on on the availability of jobs for college grads and other white collar workers, that's really been a story that's been kind of gradual in gradual decline for 20 years or so too. So we see a whole variety of software, software that allows us to buy insurance online. An insurance agent used to be a pretty good job for a college grad. Didn't necessarily require a degree, but a lot of college grads did it, and it was a pretty high-paying, high-status job. But as we moved all that online and really kind of relied on software to sell insurance, that became like a lower and lower paying job. So this is something that really goes back 20 years or so, and it's just kind of steadily chipped away at the jobs that have been available to college grads, kind of culminating with what we're seeing now with AI really being able to do a whole variety of jobs that that white collar workers have traditionally done.
The book is fascinating. It is called Mutiny: The Rise and Revolt of the College-Educated Working Class. It is published by FSG. Noam, thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Once again, Noam Scheiber's new book is Mutiny: The Rise and Revolt of the College-Educated Working Class. It is published by FSG. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.